This is a special AHA Innovators Connection podcast recorded live at the 2025 AHA Leadership Summit. I'm Bill Klaproth, and with me is Derek Idbase. He is the Chief Commercial Officer for MedHQ. In his role, Derek brings extensive executive leadership, revenue cycle experience, and a history of successfully scaling organizations and departments. And we also have Wes Batiste. Wes has over 30 years' experience in the healthcare industry with a proven record of success in development, operations, strategy, and sustained growth of ambulatory surgery centers and anesthesia. Wes is also a senior advisor with Avanza Healthcare Strategies. And Derek and Wes are here to discuss how health systems are leveraging outpatient care to improve patient satisfaction and lower costs. Derek and Wes, thanks for being here.
And thanks for having us, Bill. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Humbled honor to be here at the summit.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking with you gentlemen. So, Derek, let's start with you. So, why is outpatient strategy driving growth?
Thanks, Bill. I think it's a great question, and we get asked it a lot. It's important to differentiate. We're not talking about new cases being done. We're talking about a shift in where care is being provided. So when we talk about outpatient growth, we're talking about development in the industry of joint ventures, new facilities, new sites of service, but these are the cases that have always been done in the past. So I always want to make that differentiation because it's really important to understand that we're talking about a shift in where care is provided, not new cases being done.
Okay, so that's really interesting what you say there. So a shift in where care is being delivered, basically. So Wes, can you give us a little bit, maybe some examples of why outpatient is so different than inpatient? Can you share a few examples with us?
Of course, Bill. It's a different bias, a different mindset. It's not the same culture, and it's not the same scenario for providing care. From a nursing standpoint, the RNs, their schedules are fixed. When they start the day, they know there's an end to that day. The pace is quicker, but there's also a different culture. Most of the time, ASCs are syndicated. Physicians have ownership. They actually behave differently in the outpatient setting versus the inpatient setting. And immediate satisfaction comes from you take care of a patient, you see them through, and they're gone that day versus coming back the next day, and that patient's still there. So there's a definite immediate reward psychological factor for the nursing care. And then there's an efficiency. The EMR platform is much different. It's much simpler than the hospital system. As we move forward into patients' experience, patients' expectations, it's very positive in the outpatient arena. There's a lot less red tape. The bureaucracy is not there. The time on site is on average 30% less. A colonoscopy in the inpatient setting is about a four-hour process. It's about 2 hours in an outpatient setting. There's a time and money effect. The time is there, but also the money. The cost of care is 40% less on average in an outpatient setting. So out-of-pockets, copays are less. An orthopedic study a year or so ago found the infection rate was 50% in the outpatient setting versus the inpatient setting. So patients' expectations are to have a very efficient process, but also they expect a better experience. And that proves out. It's a smaller, more focused, more personalized approach, which it can be. There's an advantage to only focusing on outpatient surgery. And then last but not least, on the reimbursement side, again, because there's 40% margin difference in revenue to the outpatients versus the inpatients side of care, it has to be efficient. It has to be a lean operating machine. The margins, the EBITDA margins tend to be very strong, but this case per case margins are much less. So we make it up in volume. Mm-hmm. The outpatient arena is driven by volume.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that there's better health outcomes with outpatient?
For total joints, we're seeing that.
Okay.
We're seeing that with outpatient joint replacements. We're
okay.
Seeing that patients, number one, are ambulating sooner. So they're able to have therapy. Ambulation sooner decreases risk of embolisms. We're seeing an advantage to the outpatient arena, though. You know, our patient selection is different. The hospital takes all comers.
Mm-hmm.
In an outpatient setting, we're able to pick and choose. And so
okay.
A lot of those metrics that seem to be better are just based on the variable of the patient selection.
As a consumer, layperson, I always view outpatient better than inpatient, but that's just my perspective.
You bring up a good point. Most patients do. They'd rather be outpatient, and there's good reason for that. If you're inpatient, it means you're sicker. In a lot of cases, again, we're talking about selecting the right location for the patient. There's certainly cases where a joint needs to be done inpatient with comorbidities, other issues that might cause them trouble ambulating, as Wes said, or taking care of their pain at home. There's cases where those need to be done in a hospital. We're not saying that, you know, that hospitals are a dinosaur that need to go away. We're just acknowledging that the industry's shifting. And Wes touched on reimbursement. A lot of this is payer driven. 10 years ago, you could choose to get your scope in an ASC or a hospital. That was your call. You wanted to have your scope done in a hospital? Great, we'll do it there. today, major payers are refusing to pay for colonoscopies that are low risk in a hospital. They're saying, you must do this in an ASC. Mm. It's cheaper for us. We believe the outcomes may indicate to be better. And is that patient selection or is it stay time, which is directly related to infection rate, how long you're in the facility? What's driving that? You know, not really for me to say as a non-clinician, but payers are driving this change as much as anything.
Yeah.
Because it's a lower reimbursement. It's a lower cost. It's the site of care that they're choosing and the patients choose. So it's really getting driven to this area by multiple factors.
Yeah, I would tag on to that. I think exactly as Derek pointed out, we look at four P's that are driving this. And you talked about growth in the initial question. The growth is in the ambulatory platform. That's where the growth is. And that growth is being driven by four P's. Those four P's are payers, as Derek just mentioned. Payers are seeing the site of service as a value, and so the driving case is there. The next is physicians. It's one of the only, if the only, ancillary income physicians can ethically, legally participate in. And then you have patients.
Mm-hmm.
Patients are understanding that this experience, the expectations we just talked about before are there, and now you have politics. With site neutrality, with inpatient-only lists being changed, and with CON laws being removed across the country.
Yeah, so this is very interesting. Thank you for explaining the four P's, payers, physicians, patients, and politics. So it seems like there definitely is a benefit not only for patients, obviously, but for providers as well. So it seems like this is a smart move to make. So Wes, how does MedHQ then enable outpatient expansion?
So our advisory work starts with feasibility work. So we can come to a system or a hospital or an independent system, and we can first start with feasibility work. Is this a green light or a red light? Is this a development that makes sense? We can talk about the impact analysis to the hospitals and the health systems as to if we migrate certain cases, which cases should migrate to from the inpatient to the outpatient side, and what's the impact to the health system in the hospital. We can look at it from a short range and a long range strategic point. Right now in our advisory work, we have at least four or five HOPDs, hospital outpatient departments, looking at converting to ASCs, where we're seeing that strategy and that development. And then post-development, there's ongoing managerial oversight and advisory work that's done differently than the management companies. It's more of a fee-for-service basis, which, again, MedHQ, our parent company, I'll turn it over to Derek there, just what they can do to assist in that expansion.
Thanks, Wes. I think it's important to note, Wes and I are both operators by experience, right? We moved into this world slowly and naturally. So the weight of operating an ASC is significant, and the resources are less. When you look at a hospital, it's built around a large management structure in most cases. A bureaucracy runs that facility. When you move into the surgery center space, the amount of work that's laid on the administrator on site there is massive. We ask that administrator to do everything that the whole C-suite at a hospital does. And it's a smaller operation, there's no question. We close at night, we see patients, we have a schedule, we don't have patients walking in the ER, there's lower complication rates because of lower acuity, but there's still this large business, multi-million dollar business run with less management structure than a lot of mom and pop shops put into their entrepreneurship. So our job is to come in and try to make their job easier. We want to take the blocking and tackling on the MedHQ side, the blocking and tackling of operating that business, payroll, accounting, benefits, RCM, help with staffing, the things that are necessary on a day-to-day basis to run a business that take up 80% of an administrator's time. We want to give them as much of that back as possible with actionable data and then let them execute strategy, execute positive environment for the patients and the physicians where people want to come. Go out and grow the business. Work on business development. Do the things that are higher order.
Mm-hmm.
Let us take on those simple day-to-day, mundane, extremely important and necessary, but mundane tasks.
Right.
And go deliver on your strategy.
So it sounds like, Wes, as you were saying, you do a kind of a feasibility study if it makes sense. And if it does make sense, you come in to really smooth out and make the operations much more efficient.
That's the intent. It's not, hey, if you use Avanza, you're going to end up here with MedHQ, or you have to use all of our services. We're very much fit what our clients need. So if they say, hey, Wes, we don't need you. That's unfortunate for Wes. He's going to say, great. If we say we don't need RCM, we just want help with HR. Great, we could do that. But really, finding the place where we fit to make their lives easier, to make them more effective, and to make the surgery center more efficient.
Right. And how about growth then? How about when it comes to scale? How about that? How do you deal with that, Derek? What, if somebody wants to grow even further, how does MedHQ help in that area?
I think that's an area that we excel. So our company was built on scale, and this is all we focused on, is how do we build high-functioning teams to deliver at scale over and over and over again with consistency. So we can be moldable to what they need, but we can also deliver it over again multiple times across state lines if need be in a very similar fashion. So you create some compliance built in there, you create some efficiencies. If you're dealing with a health system, they know the operation in Texas is the same as in probably not California because there's going to be some differences, but let's say Texas and Kansas, we're going to be very similar. Mm-hmm. So we create this platform that helps it operate very similarly at scale and takes that off your plate. You say, okay, if we build another facility, we've got to build another handbook, we've got to set up another payroll system. No, we've just got to call MedHQ and they'll take care of that for us.
Yeah. So it sounds like you take what works through your experiences and then you just duplicate it in other areas.
Yeah.
Basically.
You just made my life's work sound very simple. Thank you.
I love it. So let me ask you this then. So Wes, let's talk about outpatient growth. Why is that so impactful in the healthcare delivery model?
It's part of what's driving it. It's a value-based model. And value-based healthcare is the...
So we're moving to this, basically, and you're kind of out in front of it.
It is moving. There's analysts say 7 to 9% compound annual growth rate for the next 5 years. That's underestimated. There's some proposals this past week came out from CMS, Medicare, indicating the inpatient-only list will be dissolved in the next 3 years. In 2026, we expect to see roughly 300 new procedures added to the approved list for ASCs. A lot of it's musculoskeletal, cardiovascular. So the growth is going there, and it is a value, and it goes back to the four Ps, and specifically the payers and the patients. It's being driven. It's being driven that way by payers, patients, physicians, and politics.
And again, I think patients, people seem to want that, because they said, I think outpatient services perceptually are viewed more positively than going to the hospital, because as you said, when you go to the hospital, you're sick. But here I can just drive over or whatever. My wife can take me here, I can get this done, and then I'm back home kind of a thing. Is that right?
Totally agree. Patients prefer to be home at night in their own bed, in their own couch, with their own TV, in their own remote control.
Yeah.
And pain control's improved. They're able to take their meds when they need them.
Right.
They don't have to order.
So let me ask you this, then. I'm just thinking about the hospital. So we're taking all these services out of the hospitals. The hospital's got to be like, wait a minute, that's how we make money. What? This is not good for us. So how does a hospital start focusing on these outpatient services?
They've become very forward-thinking now. They really have. It's taken years.
So they're seeing where it's going, and they're like, okay.
And we're working with the largest not-for-profits and for-profit systems in the country right now because they're seeing if they can't beat them, they're going to join them. We call it a haircut. They're haircuts to be taken because of moving a case from an inpatient to an outpatient setting. The reimbursement is less. But what they're finding is through physician alignment and physician recruitment, now they're able to retain and recruit physicians. They're able to increase capacity in their inpatient areas, which there's an OR shortage across the country expected to also increase. So they're looking at capacity constraints that now can be resolved. There's a lot of strategy, which we do kind of on that's the macro level of the scalable piece of what we do from the advisory side versus the granular level and just the operational efficiencies at the center level.
Okay.
So that macro level of strategy involves all those pieces and how we work with the health systems to define that, to define what is the best strategy for
right.
the health system.
Yeah, so they're seeing what's happening, going, hey, I need a care facility here. And so I live in Illinois, Chicago area. You've heard of Rush, very mm-hmm. big medical system, very well known. I live out in the suburbs, and there's like even Rush outpatient care facility. I'm like, why Rush? They're away. This is 45 minutes away from Chicago, for God's sake. But you see these popping up. Is this where they're thinking, I've got to get ahead of it. I've got to get out in the burbs. I've got to get these outpatient care facilities put together, these surgical centers. Is that right?
It increases their geographical footprint much easier than building an entire hospital campus.
Yeah.
They're able to capture that market, but then they have the inpatient campus. They have the large Rush Medical mm-hmm. Center.
Right.
That the higher acuity cases that they define out in those geographical areas in the rural communities, they can then move there.
Right. But it sounds like a company like yours, you're more nimble and can more easily move and duplicate this model and build those efficiencies a lot better than the big hospitals. Would that be right, Derek?
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about hospitals are huge, somewhat.
Yeah.
Dare I say slow developments. They're designed to be massive. That's what they're built as. And when they go to create that outpatient facility in the suburbs of Chicago, having a partner like us to deliver that efficiently and create it, who's done it over and over and over again, and improve their catchment area and expand their market, because you're right, they are getting a reduction in reimbursement, but the cost of care is lower at those centers too. They're able to align with physicians. They're mm-hmm. able to expand where they're getting patients from, expand the quality care that Rush provides to the suburbs, so patients right. don't have to come all the way in. So they find a mix between that hospital feel with the nimble yep. care that we are able to help bring to the outpatient center, and it turns into be a net positive for the facilities. There was so much angst by health systems to develop these because they were looking at it and say, okay, I used to get paid $2,500 for colonoscopy to just keep coming back to that, and now in an outpatient center I'm between $600 and $1,200, mm-hmm. sometimes lower depending on their contracts. How is that going to work? Well, you start looking at it and the patient's in the facility for half as long, or mm-hmm. we're able to do 30 scopes in the time it used to take us to do 15 because we have highly specialized staff that's running the sterile processors, that's working and flipping those rooms over, that's dedicated to just that service. So the cost of care goes down. So it's not necessarily a net negative. I think that's antiquated thinking that we're in a net negative situation. Mm-hmm. ASCs will improve the profitability of health systems. And Wes touched on the huge impact here that we can align physicians and hospitals. This is one of the only places outside of their practice that they can choose to participate from an ownership perspective in care they provide without violating STAR clause and anti-kickback clause. They get to participate with the hospitals and become partners again, which, you know, hospitals are trying and have always tried different ways to do that. You know, physician employment model, mm-hmm. we see that go up and down. There's yeah. excitement about employment and then, oh no, I don't like this, and we go back and forth. There have been very rare cases where I've seen physicians say, I don't like owning the place where I provide mm-hmm. my surgical care. So I really think this is the future of how hospitals align with their surgeons.
Okay, so let's stick with the future then, Derek. Where do you see the surgical healthcare model going? Where are we going to be in the next 5 to 10 years, say?
It's a great question. And for a non-clinician, I probably have a different perspective. But if you asked me 10 years ago, would we be doing... Wes, do you know what percent of joints are done in the outpatient setting now?
About 30 or 40%, but we'll be 70% in the next 5 years.
Oh, wow.
If you asked me that 10 years ago, are we going to do 3 in 10 joints in the outpatient setting? When I was walking around a hospital as a healthcare hospital administrator and seeing patients struggle to get down the hallway, I would have looked at Wes and said, you're crazy. You're just trying to push this outpatient strategy. It's never going to happen. This needs to be done here. Colonoscopy, sure, but this needs to be done here. Now, it's a whole different ballgame. And what we're seeing, cardiovascular care is a great example. CMS is talking about allowing coronary stents in the outpatient setting, which 10 years ago would have said no way. We're just seeing a shift, and it's from better training, it's from better technology, it's from better ASCs, and it's from a better understanding of how healthcare can be delivered. So where we'll be in 5 to 10 years, a lot further than we are today. I'm not gonna guess what that looks like, but a whole lot further than we are today, and further than any of the three of us mm-hmm. expect it to be.
Right. Well, financially, it seems like a better model as well, which is really, really important.
The cost of healthcare in the United States, we all know, is very expensive. So anything we can do to improve yeah. that and make it more sustainable yes. in the long term, while keeping our general concept of a model, I think is incredibly important. And we're seeing legislation to that effect. We're seeing different ideas around how we do that. And I think smarter guys than me are trying to figure that out. But I know this is a big piece of it.
Absolutely. This has been a great discussion, Wes and Derek. Thank you so much for your time. Before we wrap up, I'd like to get some final thoughts from each of you. So, Wes, let me start with you. Final thoughts, anything you want to add?
I'm just excited for the next 5 to 10 years you asked about. I built my first surgery center 25 years ago and never dreamed I would see what was 5 years later or 10 years later, not 25 years later, joints, spines, cardiovascular. And I don't see that changing. It's a very good model. Patients are in a warm, welcoming, safe, cost-effective environment, and that's a good product. Good products win out. And there's a lot of tailwinds to move that along. The IPO list being dissolved, more procedures being added, payers getting on the boat, health systems getting on the boat, CONs being reduced. A lot of tailwinds. I'm just excited to be a part of it. It's dynamic, and it's going to continue to be dynamic.
Absolutely. A lot of change is coming, but it's change for the good, for sure. Derek, how about you? Final thoughts.
I think we're in a really interesting inflection point in healthcare, and watching this shift to outpatient is an exciting, and it's a change that we haven't seen before that's been slowly occurring for the last 20, 25 years, but is really accelerating quickly now. And I'm excited to see where it goes. I am always in awe of our healthcare professionals and how they're able to adapt and move and improve care in every setting they're in and find the best way to care for patients. And just excited to be part of that in the tiny way that I can by providing my little bits of help here and there.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Hearing you both answer those questions and thinking about this model of almost bringing the care to the people, if you will, instead of the people coming to the big hospital where I live, they're out in the burbs. Could this model help our rural healthcare system, which is in distress right now, moving these outpatient surgery centers out a ways from the main hospital? Is there a place for rural healthcare in your model that can help our rural healthcare?
I'm from Wichita, Kansas originally, yeah. Still where I live. So Kansas is one of the largest states for critical access hospitals. And I think the issue in rural healthcare is less the ability to provide that care there or to build a center there. We could certainly go build a center in one of the little towns in western Kansas. The question is, how do we get providers there? How do we get them to live there, to provide that care there? And that's a bigger issue. There's programs out where we'll help with education bills and things like that to have people practice in rural,
yep,
rural areas. It's not necessarily the issue of being able to create a surgery center. It's being able to support a surgery,
okay,
center in those areas. I love the thinking. I really do.
Yeah.
And I would love to say yes, because that would be very exciting. Rural healthcare needs a whole podcast on its own. It's a difficult subject for sure.
I always lead with, it's not a build and they will come. You have to have the providers. The providers are key.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, thank you so much. This has really been great. Wes and Derek, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting us on. Appreciate
it. Absolutely. Once again, that is Derek Idbase and Wes Batiste. And to learn more about MedHQ and to listen to other podcasts, please visit leadershipsummit.aha.org. Once again, go to leadershipsummit.aha.org. This has been an Innovators Connection podcast brought to you by the American Hospital Association. Thanks for listening.